Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
People didn't want to see Miami that dominant again. They knew that that dominance brought a lot of cockiness and swag that they didn't like to see. And they didn't want to see college football go down that path again. I mean, Sean, like, I love the fact that we talk about him so much because I feel like he's like one of those players. You'd be like, what if? I know what the Viking are going to do, yeah. But I didn't know what this hen was going to do. The hen numbed everything.
Yo, welcome to All Things Covered with Patrick Peterson and Brian McFadden, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. The name says it all. If you like what you hear, make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Just go out and visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. So make sure you subscribe and turn on your alerts so you can get the show right away. Pat, we got another fantastic episode for our viewers. What are we going to cover on this show?
Yo, Mac, as we all know, it's draft week this week, so we got to chop it up on what's going on in Cleveland.
Yep.
And we also got an opportunity to chat with a former first rounder from the University of Miami, Santana Moss. Plus, I have another announcement to make.
Ladies and gents, you guys been following the show first quarter. Here's where we chop it up. This is a very, very different chopping it up segment. We got a special announcement. We're dropping some big time news on All Things Covered. The source of this news is actually the person who is involved in the news, and that's Patrick Peterson himself. So I will now hand the mic over to Patrick Peterson so he can go ahead and just let this big time news out and about, and everybody else can run with it because I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
Hey, man, Matt, first of all, it's always great to be on All Things Covered.
Yes, sir.
But it's another great thing to just feel completed. You know,
I know complete
you
read, now.
Yeah, you know, you read the Bible. You know what number stands for? Completions.
Mm-hmm.
It was only right to do it.
What? Whoa. Okay. Okay.
It was only right to go back to the 7, Matt.
Oh, so you're telling us your number for this upcoming season?
Yeah.
With the Minnesota Vikings, you going back to your college days and your high school days, and you rocking the number 7.
Hey, it's official, man. For everybody that don't think what it say.
That's the hard number too. That's not a soft number.
What it say inside, Matt?
Yeah, that's the authentic.
That's it.
Yeah, that's the authentic. That's not a soft number. That's a hard number. So you rocking you back at, as you say, 7. You rocking number 7. Why are you returning? Why are you returning back to your college number?
Hey, man, I think that's where it all started, man. Thing is just like we talked about a couple shows ago, man. Good Lord working mysterious ways, man. And just all three of my favorite numbers are aligning. You know, I got opportunity to rock back number 7. This is my 11th year. My birth, I'm born on the 11th day in July. My second favorite number is 21 season. It's 2021 season this year. So, you know, everything just lined up perfect. And, you know, once they, pass that new rule of, skill positions able to wear, any number between 1 and 49, it was only right. You know, I always wore it in high school, I wore it in college, I always felt comfortable with it. And that's who, how I felt. That's what started, me. So it was only right to go back to my roots and rock that set.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say number 21 was available for the Minnesota Vikings. And with this new rule that allows DBs to wear single digit numbers, would you have still switched if number 21 was available, or you were just set in stone locked when they made this rule in place to be able to have single digit numbers? You were set to go 7 regardless.
I always wanted to rock number 7 in the league, and not the only reason, because 21 is a dope number, and obviously watching Deion wear it, it's a popular number. So, that was always my alternative number, when I got into the league. I had to pick a double digit. So it's either going to be 21 or 24. Champ Bailey and Deion was like my guys who I watched growing up. So now once they made the change, it was just easy for me because 7 was always my number. I felt like 7 was like my number, like 21 is Deion's number. You know what I mean? And, I just felt like, you know, in high school and college, I made 7 known. I made it like you can tell when I went to LSU, you know, guys wanted to wear number 7.
You know, yeah, obviously you did.
They went on and they wore number 7 in high school, where Tyron didn't, but other guys wore in high school. You know, I love a tradition there. So I felt like that's my number. You know what I mean?
Man, listen, I'm fired up. I'm ready. I'm just going to, you know, wait for my jersey to come in the mail. Right. So I go ahead and put it in the frame.
That's what I'm gonna do, man. I might just see this one, man. I ain't gonna wear this one.
Okay. Well, go ahead and sign it. Go ahead and put your nice signature on that thing. And put that in the mail when you get a chance. I have one request for my guy, Pat P. Me and Pat P, we talk football all the time. We don't just talk the ins and outs, you know, the technical side. We also talk the look side, the swag side. So since you're going back to your college, your high school number, I want to know, are you going back to your college and the helmet you wore when you first came into the league? Because you know how I feel about these new age helmets, these double shell helmets. I call them the chicken coop, the revolutionary helmets they're wearing to try to prevent concussions. Man, them helmets don't work. If you can go to sleep, you can go to sleep. If you get hit hard enough, I don't care what kind of shell you're wearing, you're going to go to sleep. So my question for you, Pat P,
right.
You got 7. I know you have the one sleeve. On the one arm, you're showing the tats on the other arm. You know, you're going to have your all purple socks. Your cleat gang will be right. Are you going back to the old, I don't know if it was the shorts or the right there, which you was rocking, but you know the face mask style I'm talking about. Are you going back to that style as well?
It was the shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt. You know, I don't know. You know what, Matt? When I get there, me and Dennis going to have a sit down. And, cause they stopped making that helmet. They outlawed that helmet, man. So, you know, I gotta be within the guidelines, man. So
No. They outlawed that particular style, but they came back with something that was similar. Okay. Cause there are a few guys that rock that style. I think Tyreek Hill is one. Stephon Gilmore. You got quite a few players that rock that style. So they can, and you a future Hall of Famer, man. They can work things out. You can tell Zim, don't do that. Zim.
I might pull out the archives, man. I might pull it out.
Man, listen. Hey, listen, you know how you feel when that swag together? You know, it's a shutdown day. Matter of fact, Ramsey still rocking that same style. It's a different kind of helmet, but it's a similar style.
Yeah. I might pull it back out this year, Matt, just for you.
There we have it. Hey, breaking news here. All Things Covered, Pat P just revealed what number he will be wearing. All the Viking fans, I know you guys are tuning in. Better get ready to go rush to the store, get that number 7, because 7 will be causing a lot of havoc in your stadium, at home, in a stadium near you. Stay tuned. This is a big, big week. Every week is a big week for All Things Covered, but just in the football world, it's a big week. You know why? The NFL draft is happening this Thursday in Pat's favorite city, Cleveland. Cleveland will be hosting the NFL draft this week. Felt like it's only right that we go back down a memory lane with our very own Pat P. Talk about his draft experience. Granted, we know the experience. He was a top 5 selection to the Arizona Cardinals. But the week, because when Pat got drafted back in 2011, I think it was, the draft happened in New York City. The Big Apple, city that never sleeps. So, Pat, what was the week like for you getting ready for the draft in 2011?
If I can recall, because I think the draft happened on a Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was Thursday.
Yeah, it was a Thursday night. But Monday, everything was cool. I was in Florida and I ended up traveling up to New York on Tuesday. You know, you got to go through all the walkthrough, you know, where you're going to be standing on the stage, you know, the day before. Everything was just cool. You know, I was just pretty much chilling out in the Big Apple. Went to Flight Club, got a couple of J's. My boy KP came with a cut. I can't remember him. She was working at LAV at the time. I think her name was Jen, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Had my suit all laid out for me, you know, got ready, went over to the, got in the car, rolled over to Radio City, walked down the red carpet, got into the green room. And as you know, I wasn't there too long. Got the call from Arizona. All my family members were around the table. Had my girlfriend, she was my girlfriend at the time, but my wife now,
You know, my grandma, Hugh, Walter, my grandpa, Scooter, my dad, my sisters. You know, yeah, I got the call from Arizona, and, you know, I end up losing my damn phone at draft night because everything just went haywire. After I got the call, I put my phone on the table, went up to the stage, and next thing you know, I asked my girl, did she grab my phone? Didn't even grab my phone, so I lost my phone on draft night. But once I got drafted, that's when everything, literally life changed. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, now you walking out of the Radio City Hall, now cameras all on you. You know, now your name has been, you know, on every TV screen right now. So everybody know who you are right now. So I'm walking around New York, like, you know, getting all the congratulations, this, that, and other. So it was fun, man. I had a blast, man. I like I said, I know I joked around with Cleveland a lot this year, but if you have an opportunity to go experience the draft and be in the green room and be able to grow relationship with your other peers, go do it. You know, I definitely don't advise guys if they have the opportunity to turn that one down. I think that's definitely an opportunity of a lifetime that you want to be able to relish and cherish for the rest of your life. So Mac, you know, with the 21 draft coming up, I know you got your draft, your GM hat on for quite a while now. Who could my Vikes take with the 14th pick, man? Could it be, like, how could a top 10 shake out? Like, could it be all quarterbacks? And who you think the Vikes going to take at 14?
Well, the top 10, I think, you know, people have been highlighting the quarterbacks. I don't think, this is my early, you know, I guess I don't want to say under the radar statement, but my big time statement for the draft, I don't think more than four quarterbacks will be drafted in the top 10. I think the number is three. I think three. I'm going to throw that out there. I think three, maybe four. But if four hits.
Eric, send me over the top 10. And I'm going to tell you right now.
Okay.
Send me over the top 10, Eric.
Because the top three, I know, is Jacksonville, the Jets, and San Fran. So those three teams definitely.
San Fran taking.
San Fran's taking a quarterback. Where it gets real tricky.
They're going to take Fields.
Yeah,
Dolphins not taking the quarterback.
Wait, San Fran might take Mac Jones, Pat P.
Nah, they're gonna take Fields, man.
But that's the thing. So those three teams definitely probably they will take a quarterback. The wild card is Atlanta.
I like Jones, but Jones is much more like a stationary quarterback. And that offense and Kyle Shanahan offense, you got to be able to. And he can move, but you got to be able to throw the ball on the run, play action.
He can
boots.
Do it. Y'all jumping on Mac Jones because he got a soccer dad body.
No, I'm not saying that. Mac Jones, he did awesome this year for what he had to do at Alabama. But what I'm saying is, athletically, Justin Fields is more athletic.
All the same throws that
Mac Jones can. That's what I'm saying.
Mac Jones was probably one of the more accurate quarterbacks. Mac Jones was more accurate last year, and then Joe Burrow was in 2019. And he just, like I said, when he take his shirt off, you're not going to pick him to be on your Sandlot football team because he got a little gut. His ab game ain't really
I don't even look at that.
That's what a lot of people look at. Is starting to transition to guys that can really move, like quarterbacks that can make people miss, quarterbacks that can turn a 30-yard run into a 40 or 50. Because, you know, it's a copycat league. You look at some of the young up and coming quarterbacks. You know, they can all move. He might not be as athletic as Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, heck, even Trevor Lawrence. But I think he's getting criticized a little more than deserving because he lacks the athleticism that they have. But I do agree. I'll say this though, Pat P. San Fran will either take Justin Fields or Mac Jones for sure.
And it's going to be Justin Fields. Why?
Yeah. Any other name definitely would surprise me. But outside of those three teams, if there's not a team that trades up in the top 10, I don't know if Atlanta will take a quarterback. So that's why I think at least three guys will go for sure.
Yeah. I think Atlanta may trade out of the.
They should.
The Lions not taking a quarterback. Panthers not taking a quarterback.
Nope.
The Broncos need to take a quarterback.
Yeah, that's another question mark. We know Cowboys, they're not taking at 10.
Yeah, Bengals not taking a quarterback.
No.
So if Atlanta trades out of that, the fourth position, that's going to be the wild card.
Yeah, whoever trades, if Atlanta trades out, whoever trades in, they're taking a quarterback.
Right.
I think 100%. They're definitely moving, making that move to take a quarterback. Right. And to answer your second question, your new team, the Minnesota Vikings, what I see happening with them in the first round, currently they're at 14, right? They're selecting 14. They either go
offensive
line or defensive line. They release starting left tackle from last year, Riley Reiff. This is a very, very heavy, deep O-line class, especially at the tackle positions. So they might go out and go get a guy to fill the shoes left by Riley Reiff. And if not, O-line, maybe pass rusher. You know, go get you an up-and-coming pass rusher to pair up with Hunter, who's back healthy. But those are the two sides that I easily see going, you know, for the Vikings. Either O-line, specifically speaking, tackle, or DN. Okay. In either direction, I think your team gets better. So maybe if they feel like offensive linemen are so deep, you might go get a DN in the first round and double back or go back in the second round and go get one of the tackles that may be available, because this is a very, very heavy offensive tackle draft. And now you can get quality value at that position in the second round and maybe even in the third round.
Okay. I like that.
All right. You guys know what time it is. It's your favorite part of this show. A lot of fans have really loved this segment of our show, Has Pat Heard. But before we get to Has Pat Heard, make sure you guys stay tuned, because after halftime, we're joined by former first round selection by the New York Jets, former wide receiver for the Washington Football Club, Santana Moss, will be joining us on the opposite side of the half. But before we get to halftime, let's chop it up with Pat P. Has Pat Heard? This is where we check in on how Pat P has been doing with the sporting news during his offseason. Pat's record so far, 22 of 33. So he's gotten 22 questions right out of 33. So he's doing fairly well. Last week, we're going to say he was 3.5 out of 4.
Oh, thank you. You gave me that one.
3.5 out of 4. So the first question for you is, the actual body weight of Devontae Smith was just revealed last week. Do you remember how much he weighed?
I did remember hearing that story, but I think I'm going to take a wild guess. I did hear the story, but I don't remember the number.
Okay, if you don't give me the exact number, I'll count it as being correct for you.
Okay.
If you can tell us, if you can get within 3 or 4 pounds of the actual weight.
Yeah, it was 160 something.
Okay, you got to give me a number. I said 3 or 4 pounds.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was 167.
Oh, you got it. It was 166.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I remember seeing it.
Okay, so my second question for you before we go to the next Has Pat Heard question. Do you think he should drop in the draft because he's 166 pounds, regardless of what he did in the collegiate level dominating? Do you think he should he drop because he's that light? Playing wide receiver.
Devontae a ball player, man. And it's hard to deny a ball player. And the proof is in the pudding. You put the film on, and the ball is in his hands.
He go get it.
It's electrifying. Like, point blank, period. You know what I mean? And he's done it against the best competition in college football.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Week in, week out. He's won a trophy, won it for a reason.
I agree.
The first receiver Heisman Trophy winner in, like, what, 20-some-odd years?
Yeah, Desmond Howard. Hey, longer than that.
Like we talked about, Mac, they don't pass those out now.
No, sir. No, sir, Bob. Okay, Pat P., you got that one right. The second question for you is, Trevor Lawrence just signed a $2 million endorsement deal with what drink company?
I did not hear this one.
Okay, it's a drink company, though. You can get a guess.
It's $2 million. So is it a sports drink company?
Yes, it's a sports drink company.
He went to Clemson, so that's ACC.
Yeah. Okay. I see you trying to go ahead and figure it out.
That's not Gatorade. So I see Powerade.
Oh, it is Gatorade.
It is Gatorade. Really?
Yes. 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 Okay. He already signed a deal with Adidas. He just signed a $2 million deal with Gatorade. That might be a half for you right there. Cause you did.
Yeah. Because I know I know they got Gatorade there, but I know most ACC schools with it being, at least from when I know we don't drink Gatorade because
we don't drink Gatorade either. Cause you know why?
Exactly.
Cause Florida.
Exactly. Florida. So that's why we don't drink Gatorade. Mm-hmm. So I thought most other teams, and for some odd reason, I thought I saw Powerade on their cooler cans, but yeah, that's why I went that way, because I know the history of college football and Gatorade, and that's why I said Powerade. But got me.
Okay. Next question for you. What game did Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni play with draft prospects during Zoom calls? The head coach for the Eagles, he said he played a certain game with draft prospects on Zoom call.
I ain't hear this.
Rock, paper, scissors.
He played a game, rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Yeah, he did. I don't know what, you know.
The breakup, the monopoly?
He said he wanted to see how competitive the prospects were, like in trying to win. So he wanted to play rock, paper, scissors with them. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, that's what he said.
Hey, Mac, is my screen froze?
No, are you frozen? Oh, you're not. I saw your eyebrows move. Oh, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. Nah, he should have been frozen saying that foolishness.
Right.
Yeah. What that mean? How can you determine how competitive? This is rock, paper, scissors. What about people who don't even play rock, paper, scissors? Like, what? That don't even
make sense. My daughter played rock, paper, scissors, shoot. So you telling me that she competitive?
Yeah, my kids play it all the time, too. And that's the thing. They do it wrong sometimes. If some people say rock, paper, scissors, shoot, or some people say rock, paper, scissors, they just show what they had.
It's the third one, man.
You know how some people are like, what are we doing?
No, it's
like,
the third. It's the third.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's there. Yeah. Well, that's what he said. He said, you know, he wanted to see how competitive they were and wanted to talk trash to them.
Hey, you remember, man, Cincinnati Bengals asked me, man, what's the difference between a pen and a pencil?
Yeah, we saw how that worked out for Cincinnati.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Last question for you. Gronkowski set a new Guinness World Record for what?
I haven't heard this either. That's what, hey, man, Mac, you see me where I'm at right now? I ain't even at home, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy to see you on dry land. You know, usually you ain't on dry land.
You got me at the perfect time, man. This was a great week to hit me as Pat Herb. And y'all got
you've been doing pretty well the last few shows.
Yeah, because I was home, man. I was on dry land, coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, but
let me tell you what he did. He caught a pass from a helicopter 600 feet.
Oh, no.
You saw it, right?
I did see that, but I didn't know that was him because he had a number.
Yep, that was Gronkowski.
So I got that right. I didn't know that was Gronkowski, though, but I saw that this morning because it was 600. I can tell you exactly what it was. It was in Arizona State Stadium.
Arizona
football.
Stadium.
I think it was spring football. Arizona State, Arizona Wildcats, not the Hook'em, however you say it in Arizona State. But anyway. He had a blue jersey on. He had a blue jersey on, and a helicopter dropped the football. Yep. I did see that.
You're right.
I didn't know that was Rob though. I just saw the clip. I didn't know that was him.
That was him. All right. Well,
we in there.
You know, we got to go to committee on some of these, but you know, but we understand given the circumstances as we see the backdrop.
And, right.
You know, you've been doing a lot of moving around, so we understand. Now, 21 questions. We might, you know what? There's no might. We will have to change this part of our show to 7 questions because as Pat P revealed early in the show, he now has a new jersey number. He's rocking number 7 for the Minnesota Vikings. So this may be the last week you guys hear of 21 questions. We will change that to 7 questions. 21 questions is where we get a chance to interact with you, the fan, the listeners, and the viewers. If you want your question to be answered in the future, leave a question attached to a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we may get it on this show. This question comes from Tay in Florida. Shout out to Tay, who's in Florida. I love this question, Pat P. Why doesn't Rondé Barber get any love when it comes to the top cornerback list? He definitely revolutionized the nickelback position. Man, Rondé played 16 years, Pat P. Listen to these stats. 47 career interceptions, including 10 in 2001 when he led the league, 8 pick six, 197 pass deflections, 15 forced fumbles, 28 sacks, 5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time first team All-Pro, part of the 2000s All-Decade team, and a Super Bowl champion. Hey, Tay from Florida, thank you for that big-time question, and I'm right there with you. Why is he overlooked, not just at the all-time cornerback list? This man should be in the Hall of Fame by now.
Yeah.
He should be in the Hall of Fame now. Look at that championship team that he was a part of in Tampa Bay, that outstanding shutdown defense. Mm-hmm. He was the third member of the Big Three, if you're asking me. The first two guys, Derrick Brooks, Warren Sapp, and then Barber. Derrick Brooks, Warren Sapp, they're in the Hall. Barber should be in the Hall as well. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame.
They're probably going to put John Lynch in front of Barber.
But I'm right there with you. Because John Lynch was on that team, too.
Yeah, Lynch is in. Lynch is in. My bad. Lynch is in. But so, I consider...
I'm with you. I'm with you. 100%.
Lynch is already in. But I think Barber was part of the big three before Lynch, in my opinion.
I think Rondé would definitely get in very, very soon. Because... Like you said, what he was able to do over 16 years and able to change the nickel position, not only change the nickel position, but he was the first guy to be a corner that not the first guy, but one of the first guys to be one of those transcending players to where he can play outside and inside. Remember, he was a starter on the outside and then when he came down to third down defense.
He went inside. Yeah. Rondé and Brian Kelly. Abraham. They had
Abraham.
So he was always that outside perimeter starter, but in sub packages, he moved inside.
Right. Because he was, I mean, obviously in Tampa, they ran a lot of cover too. So they wasn't acquired to do a lot of running behind like the systems that, you know, that I'm in or you're in the fire zone, me being in the man to man system. So it's different. What he was able to do in that cover two system and what he was able to do to really revolutionize the nickel position. It was like he's the god of the nickelback position.
No question. Like, he's the nickelback image. Right.
No doubt about it.
He could be the corner image for guys who have the same stature. You know what I mean? Not be big like yourself, but guys that can be so instinctive. 47 interceptions, man. This man had
eight
to the house. Eight pick sixes. 28 sacks.
Yeah.
15 forced fumbles. This man was a ball. He was a baller. Anytime he played against Philadelphia.
It was Philly. Anytime he played against Atlanta. He balled against Atlanta.
He balled against everybody.
Yeah, nah. He had a great game.
And he's been a finalist. He's just been waiting, Pat P. He's been a finalist. He's just been waiting.
But he's going to get in. He's definitely going to get in, deservingly so. But here's my thing. This where I think, and I don't want to get no grief over this or anything like this, but this is where I believe where the committee got to have people that played the game. In between the lines with these guys. Cause there's a lot of guys out there that got the stats that, you know, belong in the hall. And that's not there because I forgot who we had on. They talked about this with the younger writers that maybe
was it Steve Smith Sr.?
I think it was, but that may not have X, Y, and Z back in the 70s. Here we are in 2021. So how do they know?
Oh, that was Mel Blunt. That was Mel Blunt who said that.
Mel Blunt, that's who it was. So that's why we got to have more guys that play the game, more guys that's in the white lines that are actually watching the game. Because that's my biggest thing on people who are giving out, not discrediting them, not all of them, but for the most part, they're watching the primetime games. If you're going to really do your due diligence and put somebody in a category where they should belong, you have to watch everybody. You have to watch the games. You have to watch how they move. You have to watch how offenses are literally altering their game plan around this one player. Man, that matters.
This is horrible that Barber is not in.
But
he has the numbers and he has the film.
Yeah, and I think he will definitely be in soon. Because you know me, Matt, you know, with me wanting to have those aspirations of being in the hall.
No question.
If you have two or more first team all pro, it's a 40% chance of you making it. If you have three.
You got three.
If you have three or more, it's a 67%.
It increases. And he's still waiting. We're going to start it right here for Barbara. We're going to start it right here for Rondé.
He'll be in soon.
No question. We got to get that campaign going right now.
Yeah, he'll be in soon.
And I can tell you this much. They have leverage. The Buccaneers organization have leverage. They just won a championship. Yeah. They just won a championship. They have leverage to do something to try to get.
Mark my word. He'll be in within the next 3 years.
With his name. He should.
He'll be in the next 3 years.
And great question from Tay in Florida. Tay is in Florida. Great question. We want to remind everyone that you can find us on Instagram at All Things Covered Pod. Each week, we give clues for our next guest. The first person to guess correctly gets a follow and a shout out on the pod. So we have to shout out ant.hnz who was the first press person to guest Kirk Cousins last week. You like that? Again.
Like that?
Again, follow us on All Things Covered Pod for the very best content from the show. It's halftime for us, but on the other side of the break, we'll be joined by Santana Moss. Stay tuned.
Do you...
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Ladies and gents, we back from halftime. We promise you guys a special guest joining us on the opposite side of the half. We went out and made a big time addition. You guys know how we do. Usually we add members to the secondary. We even added some members to the quarterback position, but we went out and got a prime time electrifying wide receiver, good friend of mine. Also a foe at one point in time on the collegiate level. First round pick in 2001 out of the University of Miami. I will not say out of the I won't say that letter, but I will say the University of Miami, 14-year NFL vet, 2005 Pro Bowler, second team All-Pro that same year. You can find him on Instagram at 8-9 on Instagram, man. Santana Moss here, All Things Covered, joining us on the show, Pat P, Brian McFadden. Tana, man, how you doing?
What's up, man? I've been, we going to get off topic a little bit or a little early. I've been waiting for you to come back to Miami so we can boo, man. But, you know, we'll see.
Hey, Pat P, I forgot to tell you, man. Tana's heavy. He's heavy in the booth.
Listen, man, I seen it all, Mac. I seen all the boobs.
Man, Tana heavy in the boo, man. We got to get in some of our stories a little later in the show, Tana, man, because you know how we used to get a crack in the boo down there in Miami. Yeah, no doubt. But man, we got to address something just starting in the first quarter with you, man. Growing up, you a South Florida kid, Carroll City, you know what I mean? 305 Dade County, but you grew up rooting for the Hurricanes, the Seminoles, and the Gators. Why was it so hard for you to root for one team? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How is that even possible? You rooted for all three in-state big-time blue blood football programs. Why was it so difficult for you to choose one to root for?
I mean, it was only natural to root for the home team because I was from Miami. So you always going to root for Miami. My grandmother used to take me to the Miami games when I was young. There was a guy, she said, that was something just like myself. A punt returner, wide receiver. I forgot the guy's name, but he was all world. And I never even grew up, you know, really. That was way before my time. I was too young to remember. Mm-hmm. But as I got older and then I became a Chief, I mean, something about them Seminoles, you know, and it was just like, man, that chant we had. I went to a Florida State Cincinnati Bearcats game. My grandmother took me to my cousin was playing in Cincinnati Bearcats. He was a true freshman from out of New Orleans playing receiver. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And, you know, just being in the area, I'm like, man, I'm rooting for Florida State. But my cousin is a Bearcat, so I got to show him some love. So I'm there rooting for my cousin, but I wanted Florida State to win. I bought a jersey. She gave me money to buy a jersey. And I bought the oddest number, 48, this 48 Florida State jersey. Mm-hmm. Bro, it's crazy how the world works, how things come back around to you. But I'm sitting there with this 48 jersey on. Family members mad at me. I don't care, man. I got a Florida State jersey on. And then fast forward, that was my number at Miami.
Your freshman year. Your freshman year, right?
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm the win 48. And I'm sitting here like, man, maybe I'm getting paid back from winning that 40, buying that 48. And I'm going to watch my cousin. But I don't know, brother. I really don't, man. It's just, I was, I think it was always Florida State for me. You know, in the state of Florida, when you had to put all teams together, It was just Florida State. It was something about them more than it was Miami, but I still couldn't just leave my team behind. So I rooted for them also.
Yeah, but wait a minute. You, so growing up, hey, Pat P, you know I got to dig a little deeper into this topic.
I know you like to dig, man. Santa, you got to dig.
Growing up, you had a diehard love for Florida State.
Florida State.
But you go to Miami.
Yeah.
Like what created the disconnect?
I mean, you tell me. I want to know my
leave home, man.
I mean, honestly, you think about it, man. You just look, you know how it is, man. Florida State was one of those it schools. Miami was too. But at the time when Miami got me in the doors, they wasn't. They was on a kind of like decline, and they was losing scholarships crazy and on probation, you name it. It was so much going on in Miami. So now you have a thirst for whatever talent you can get. I mean, however you can get them in the doors, they was doing that in Miami. At Florida State, I remember, I forgot y'all defensive back coach. I think he was a defensive coordinator.
Mickey Andrews.
Andrews would come down. He was watching Bradley. And I'm sitting there trying my hardest to go show this dude what I can do in practice. I mean, I see him on the sideline. I'm bumming cats in practice. Kansas City wasn't throwing the ball like that. And when you look at the body of work that I had up until that point when he was looking at Bradley and some of the other guys we had, OJ, you know, OJ played D-line at the time. He's watching all those guys on defense. But it was nothing that I did that can kind of like raise his eyebrows. And it was all cool. It was cool because I understood my circumstances. You know, it was just, you know, odd for us to even, you know, show off or have a guy outside that can really, you know, stir the stuff in that kind of offense we was in. But
so if Florida State would have offered Tanner, you would have went to Tallahassee?
Oh, no question. Yeah. No question.
Oh, man.
Because I knew Florida State would have offered me to come in there and play football.
No
like
question.
Like I said before, I don't even, you know, coming into Miami, I when I first got notice of how I was getting in the door, it wasn't like the football team really wanted me. It was track. So I was like, no, I'm not coming. And it wasn't until I took a visit to Western Michigan and experienced the cold. And I was like, oh, if Miami give me that track scholarship, then I'm taking it because, you know, I can play football. I didn't have no doubt in my mind. And think about it. All the guys that came from Kansas that went to Florida State and Miami. Miami was getting D Brown, you know, our safety, Devin Brown. And they also wanted Robert Sanford, our running back. Surprisingly, he didn't go there. He ended up going to Western Michigan.
Yeah.
And they took Najee Davenport instead of him. Both of those guys was head to head when it comes to best running backs, you know, in high school football that year. So I knew I could play with these guys. I'm lining up next to these guys every day. So it's no question that if you're picking these guys to go anywhere around Florida or wherever else, I can play on the collegiate level at a high level. So I just wanted to get in the door. So once I realized that opportunity was through track, I'm like, hey, you ain't got to tell me again. I'm going to get in here, and then the rest is going to be up to me.
Yeah. And, Chana, I was going to ask you about, you know, how a guy like yourself become a walk-on. But you just alluded to that very well. But I'm going to jump to my next question. When you get to Miami at the time, you guys, like you talked about, you guys wasn't quite at the level you guys were in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
What groundwork that you guys put in motion to that 2000, you know, the early 2000 to turn that thing back around?
Great question. Honestly, man, my class was like no other. That 2001 class, graduating class, we came in 97 and we was all just eager to be. We grew up watching Miami. Like, you got to think about it. I saw it firsthand. I'm sitting right there in the backyard watching these Hurricanes be dominant, you know?
Right.
So everybody else who they kind of went out to recruit, Reggie Wayne, Darrell Jones, you name it, all the other guys, Dan Morgan, all these guys who came in my class, you know, Ed Reed, we actually got a chance to see what Miami was like. And we wanted to be a part of that. We didn't care about what they was going through. I'm like, look, in order for us to be known around here, we have to be a part of what these guys did by putting these plaques up, putting those trophies on the stand and raising those banners in our stadium and stuff like that. So we was eager to make a difference. And then we also understood that we on probation right now. We have a prime time to really go out here and really strut our stuff and be noticed early because they need players. Like my freshman year, I think it was the most freshman that ever had played in Miami history. We had to play walk-on.
Yeah.
You know, I was a walk-on. I was considered a walk-on. Like it was guys other than me though, who wasn't getting a scholarship that was playing as a walk-on. So it was just odd, man. But we went through so much that first year. Guys before us, they had a class before us with EJ, Nate Webster, you name it. It was EJ, Nate Webster, Al Blades, Damian Lewis.
That Leonard class, Myers. Leonard Myers was on that team.
Yeah, that class, Leonard Myers came in with me. That class alone had already set the tone as that, hey, man, we got to make a difference around here. So the 2001 class just joined forces and like, look, we want to be a part of history. Not the history that's going on right now, a part of some of the history that was left behind. In order for us to do that, we got to come out and be special. So that's what happened, man. We really made a pact then as freshmen, like, look, before we leave here, we're going to win the national championship. That was our pact.
So what was your emotions then, missing out on that epic season, seeing someone like Eric Reed who entered college with you, being a part of that team? Like, what was your emotions seeing those guys win the championship when you went on to the league?
I wasn't mad. I was more mad with the college football itself, because I feel like they let us down. You know, don't get me wrong. Look here, however you want to call it, we got a chance to finally beat Florida State my senior year. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, regardless of who was better or not, it is what it is. If you set the rules that say that you have to beat the best to be the best. We did that. You know, we lost one game early in the season where we went out to Washington and laid down. And we could have easily won that game if they give me that touchdown at the end of the game. You can go back and watch the film. All you need is 1 foot in college football. I got 1 foot in the end zone. They say I was out of bounds. But we gave these guys a game because we allowed them to get ahead of us early and we fought our way back. So whatever it may be, we put ourselves in that situation. But then we beat the best. Florida State. That was the best. We beat them. So fair and square, we should be honored or given that right to play in a national championship game. We wasn't.
Hey, Tanner, real quick. So do you feel like the refs was against Miami at the time in the early 2000s? Because you remember in 2001 that PI call, which was not a PI. And you know, I was a huge UM fan as well. So do you think the refs had a little bit to do with the game at the time, or you think they felt a certain way about you?
You know what? I could sit here and be that bitter player and say, yeah, it was always against us. And so a little of that still lingers in my head, thinking that people didn't want to see the dominance again. I do believe that.
Right.
But some of that stuff was hard to, not see, because we were just dominant. We was a dominant force. If you think about it, if we allowed to go to the 2000 national championship, not saying that we just going to beat Oklahoma. We don't know. We didn't get the chance to play them. I felt we would, though. That team was – we was one of those teams. We easily beat that game. Not saying we will, but I'm saying if we beat that game, then they go win in 2001. Then 2002, they have another chance to win, which they won that game against Ohio State. That was, talking about that penalty. We easily have another three-peat in Miami. You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot. You can see now that we're talking about it. It was a lot going on back then to not allow us to be who we were, because people didn't want to see Miami that dominant again. They knew that dominance brought a lot of cockiness and swag that they didn't like to see, and they didn't want to see college football go down that path again.
I know you weren't a part of the 2001 championship team, but you laid the foundation. Your class, as you stated, laid the foundation for that successful epic year. And you played with all of those guys that were able to hoist that championship trophy. So the question for you, Tanner, do you believe that 2001 team championship Miami team is one of the best college championship teams to ever do it? If so, why?
I mean, I'm all being biased. Yeah, I'm going to say they was the best team ever. You know what I mean?
No, but, no, you can't be biased on here. You can't be biased with it. You got to be honest. You got to be honest.
Real. I'm going to be real. I mean, I can't look beyond Miami. I don't care about other schools, because that's where, that's all I orange and green. Like, yeah, at one point in time, it was other schools that I wanted to attend.
Yeah.
Once I got in those doors, it was nobody else that I ever thought about, but I truly believe that the 2001 team, especially because they won a national championship, they have to be, when it comes to just the athletes alone. And then it wasn't about just winning it. You know what I mean? It's the way they won it. You know what I mean? It's the scale of how you watch those games. Those games, you can arguably sit here right now. We can sit here and bring up a lot of cases of each guy that was a part of that championship. What did they do afterwards? You know what I'm saying? Guys that made, monumental, or you could say pivotal points in that those games leading up to the national championship and the national championship game. What was their post-careers like after they left? So when you look at that alone, like, I watch a lot of college football to this day. And, yes, you're going to get some of those teams that you're like, man, that team was put together, blah, blah, blah. But then when those guys leave, those guys who was so, pivotal in the team winning, what did they do in their post-careers? You didn't see that same play on the pro level. So that's how I grade. I look at those guys and what they did in college, and then I say, man, as pros, they was dominant too, and they had long careers. So that's why, you know, I give that 2001 team a nod, because one, I don't look past UM. And then two is just looking at the, you know, their body of work after they left college. All those guys had great careers. Those guys who we talked about in college making those plays, they went to the pros and they was dominant, you know, on the pro level as well.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. You know what I mean? You definitely take it from different angles, but that's a big time point. You know what I mean? What the successful collegiate players did that won a championship, what did they do in the next level? I like that. I like that take.
Yeah,
but, Tanner, I won't agree with you though. That 0-1 team is not the best team, so I'm just throwing it out there. But I like your take though.
Look, I don't agree either, because I would say the 2000 team, but we didn't win a championship. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, I know why you're not going to agree with me. You know, you Simmons just have something about those Canes, man. Regardless of how much we try to put that pass behind us and be boys, the only time I can be your boy is when we playing cards, because if we start talking about football, then we got to go at each other head. You know what I'm saying? So,
hey, you already know, anytime we played y'all, man, anytime the field goal team ran on the football field, man, we holding our breath, man. Man, Pat P, man, listen, even till this day, anytime I see Florida State trot on the football field to kick a field goal, man, I'm ready to throw up.
Yeah.
No, listen, Mac, I'll never forget. I remember playing for the Park Ball Pompano Eagles, and it was always on a Saturday night. I remember the rainy game when my boy Roscoe Parrish got his inside.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Tanner was going then.
That was 03, right? 03,
yeah. That was my junior year. That was 03.
Boosie hit him.
Yeah. Yeah. They had them orange pants on. That was like our first time rocking them orange pants.
The Hurricane game.
Like, yes, sir. Hey, but yeah, I remember watching all those games. Doing park ball, getting ready for my game. But Tanner, man, we heading to draft this week, which is mind-boggling to me. I didn't even know you was in the same draft class as Reggie Wayne.
Yeah.
So heading into draft night, did you think you or Reggie Wayne would be the first Miami receiver selected?
Great question, man. Honestly, look, because I get, you know, especially that we done, you know, and you look at Reggie's career, Reggie was phenomenal from day one. He was great for a guy like myself, because honestly, when you have to scale yourself on, or put yourself on a scale of saying what you want to look like or who you have to compare yourself to be to play at this level, to have a guy like Reggie Wayne, it was easy for me to live up to what I had to live up to be able to play. Because Reggie out the door, he was prototypical to us. You know, I've spoken about this many of times to different podcasts and different, you know, people I share stories with. Reggie was the prototype as a wide receiver in the collegiate level that I've ever seen. And it was like he was on my team. I feel like he was just that 6'1", you know, 6 feet, 6'1". He had the size. He had the build. He caught everything. And, you know, I look back at a lot of receivers. I judge them and I say, man, you know, what could I bring to the table that's going to allow me to be in the same breath as the Reggie Wayne? So I knew my game was different. You know, my game was, you know, a little more beat that guy all the time. And it wasn't about, you know, playing with him in the line of scrimmage. I'm just going to run past you. One of the things that I worked on more than anything that Reggie allowed me, or Reggie helped me with, and he didn't help me because I asked him to help me, is watching him not miss a pass. Mm-hmm. However that ball got to him, he caught it. So I used to judge myself like, man, I might drop a hitch, you know, because I'm trying to turn upfield with that thing. And I remember CJ telling me, like, Tanner, they ain't gonna call your name unless you catch the ball first. And then I just watch film and I'm sitting there like, man, boy, Reggie catch 2 yard catch, 3 yard, and it adds up. So watching him, having him there, it made me grow as a player. It made me grow as a receiver. And then allowing myself just to be me, when I ball out of my hand, I'm looking for that band to strike up because I know what I'm going to do afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So to answer your question, I care less about who went first. Mm. I've always, at the time of being a Hurricane, when I finally got a chance to start alongside with him, we can't be the same. Somebody has to do something different. You know, I always looked at Reggie for being Reggie, and I looked at myself for being me. Like, we was the great, we was like a perfect match. When you have a duo of receivers, you can't put two Odell Beckhams out there. Somebody gonna feel cheated. You understand?
Right.
You gotta have a Reggie Wayne and a Santana. You gotta have a guy that's gonna catch everything, that's gonna move the chains, that's gonna dice you up, that's gonna beat you up. And then you gotta have a guy that's, you know what, when you caught slipping, you know what I mean? That's how I look at myself. I never compare myself as being better or less, because I felt like together we meshed perfectly. You know, so when we was coming to the draft, my body of work kind of had built up to the point to where you look at it and you was like, I heard the, you know, the rumblings that Tanner, you know, my junior year, they told me like, look, if you get into this draft, you and P-Dub, you might mess up things for P-Dub. You know, that's what I was hearing my junior year. So going into my senior, it was no doubt that I was going to get drafted in the first round. I had no clue who was going first or second. I just felt like I was going to be drafted in the first round. So when it happened, you know, at the time, I didn't have even a chance to let it, you know, soak in. Like, oh, man, I just got taken before Reg. It was just a great moment because I've always looked forward to having this moment.
Yeah. And Santa, you were selected 16th and Reggie went 30th, right? Yeah, Reggie went 30th.
Yeah, Santana was 16th.
Hey, Tanner, has the perception of smaller receivers changed since you entered the league 20 years ago?
Oh, no, no question. I mean, no question. I mean, this put it like this. This right here will answer your question. When I was coming out in 2001, this was the narrative. This is what was told to my agent and what was told to me in my face. If you were 6 feet, if you was 5'11", you would be the first receiver taken.
Wow.
That's what was told to me. And I sit there like, and you got to understand, we babies, 20 years old, 21 years old, we don't understand. We just trying to make it, man. We done been through the fire, man. We from South Florida. Whatever you think we've seen, we saw and more. And whatever you think we went through, we've done that and more. So to be where I'm at, the way I got in, I'm not thinking about where on the scale. I'm just thinking about getting in that door because that's what I dreamed of doing.
Yeah,
you asked me when I was 5 or 6 years old what I want to do, play pro football. You know, so now to be here, to be able to say, hey, I'm finna, in a week or so, I'm about to be drafted. I care less about the number and I care less about the round. I just know I was going. I know the body of the work that I left behind has allowed me to see a nice payday where I can take care of my family and pursue something that I've always wanted to do. So to hear somebody say, look, man, man, this is phenomenal. But if you were such and such size, you'd be first. How could you rob me from that because of my height? You understand?
Right.
So a little of that, knowing that when I got into the league, I think that always hung over me. And I've always, if you ask me, and I can't say that's the reason why I played big. No, I can't, because that was just me. It was in my DNA. Like, punch him in my face, you better punch a little harder. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was in my DNA. Like, I just was born that way. Like, you ain't going to stop me because you say you're going to stop me. You better prove it, you know, or do it.
And hey, so, Tanner, real quick, before I forget, you talking about bigger receivers. Do you remember the receivers that got drafted before you?
Oh, no question. Yes. Yes. Robinson.
Okay.
Dave Terrell.
What college they went to? Dave Terrell went to
Michigan.
He got drafted by who?
He went to Chicago.
Okay. Yep. He was the first one.
Warren Robinson went to South Carolina. North Carolina State. North Carolina
there you
State.
Go. Yep. And who drafted him?
Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And Rod Gardner went to the Redskins. Well, now that's called the Washington football team.
Yep. So, and what college you went to?
You already know what time it is. But think about, hold on. Now that we bring that up, and I don't know if we're going to get to this or not, ask me what I was told that I was going, what team I was going to of draft week.
Who? What team you was going to draft week?
I talked to nobody but Washington Press.
Really?
I was going to the Washington Redskins at the 15th pick. Everybody and their mama called me from Washington like, are you ready to be in the, you know, back then it was called.
Wow.
You know, so being that I'm the person that I am, like, show me. I'm not from Missouri, but you still got to show me. I never got my hopes up high.
Wait a minute.
Like, look, man, until I get drafted, I don't want to talk about where I'm going. But whatever happens, you know, it's going to happen.
So Washington, they're telling you they're going to draft you. But instead of drafting Santana Moss, they go draft Rob Gardner, another wide receiver.
Yeah. So now let me tell you why. Dan Snyder wanted me, and if I'm not mistaken, Schottenheimer wanted the taller receiver. And they had a few. Look, this is crazy because it lingered around my whole Jet career. For 4 years, every player we get from the Redskins would come over and tell me the story. Like, man, you supposed to be in a skin. And I'm like, well, damn, that shit was true then because I was told that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dan Snyder came in there, this is what we want. And Schottenheimer said, no, I want a tall receiver. And so he picked Gardner because of that. And that's why the Jets moved up and got me at 16 because they thought I'd be gone at 15.
Wow. Crazy story.
And so Lockett, you know, the guy Lockett from Seattle, his dad was in Washington. He came over to the Jets and said, bro, you won't believe what was going on over there. And I'm like, what? He say, man, Dan Snyder wants you. And then to add to that, every year Dan Snyder tried to trade for me while I was a Jet. And
so, so the trade makes sense now.
It makes a lot of sense. But guess what? The year that he didn't try, that's the year I got traded there. It's crazy.
Because if you think about it, they traded Washington traded Lavernius Coles for you. And you and Trouble Coles are not that – it's not a big difference in the measurables. You know what I mean? I think Trouble Coles may be an inch or so taller than you.
Taller.
But that was Dan Snyder just feeling some type of way because he didn't get a chance to draft you initially, and he wanted to get his hands on you. So now it makes sense. You know what I mean? The underlying stories and draft nights, we hear it all the time. But to hear your story and hearing that, they wanted to get you. The owner wanted to go one way. The head coach wanted to go another way. And usually we hear the owner always win that battle. But in that scenario, the head coach won the battle. Eventually, owner came back and trumped the head coach and made that move happen, the trade.
I'm sitting in the office with Dan, and he say, man, can you believe it? Every year, I sent out a trade for you. And in 2004, I watched you light up the playoffs. I don't know if you was a part of that.
See the team?
You had just
I wasn't there yet. But they talk. They still talk about that in Pittsburgh.
I ran a punt back against y'all in the second round playoffs. The first round, I bummed Quint Jammer in San Diego and had a touchdown. So the first round playoffs, I had 100-some yards with a touchdown receiving. The second round playoffs, I run a punt back. The first punt return in Jet history in the playoffs. So Dan say, man, when I saw you do that in the playoffs, I'm like, man, I'm not even going after this guy no more. There's no question they're not going to get rid of this guy. And he said, then I get paid for something out. It's going to be a equal swap, Lavernius for Santana. And he's like, this is crazy. You know, so I'm sitting there like, man, look, I don't know how it happened. I know Porter's had a little hand in it and Drew Rosenhaus. But at the end of the day, what was meant to be happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I really looked at that as like, look, I enjoyed my time in New York. It was bumpy. It was a bumpy road from the start. But I'm grateful because I experienced so much as a kid, and I was able to take that and use that as growth. And I was able to take that with me to Washington. And I was, to me, you know, regardless of the circumstances of what we went through as a team and, you know, the up and downs and not going to the playoffs, I still grew into, you know, a pretty good talent, you know what I mean? And I was able to display that, you know, year in and year out.
Yeah, man. Fast forwarding over to, you know, 2005 season where you balled out, had 84 catches, 9 touchdowns, 1,400 yards, second in the NFL. Behind our former guest, all thing covered, Steve Smith, what was unleashed for you that year? Like, what
crazy.
Was the turning point for you coming into that 2005 season?
Opportunity. Yeah. Here's the opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, so let's go back. So first of all, I never get my true respect for my first year really playing in the pros, the first full season was 2002. I was drafted in 2000 when I got hurt initially outdoor in training camp. I didn't play that season until like the last two or three games. So, you know, you can just throw anybody out there by that time. That game is well ahead of me. That season is well ahead of me. My first year playing was 2002. I was an all pro as a punt returner, first team all pro. No one ever puts that. Go and look it up. Google it. My first season, I led the league in punt returns, and I didn't get a chance to go to the Pro Bowl because back then, it was almost that. Show me 1 year, then the next year you'll go. They gave me an alternate as a Pro Bowler, and I was a first team. I was first team All-Pro as a punt returner. So, you know, that alone. And then the next year, I hit him in the face because now I have 1,000 yards, you know, in less than 16 weeks. I didn't start until week 5. And I get 1,000-yard season, my first 1,000-yard season, my first year starting. And I didn't start the whole season. So that year, if you look at 2003 and look at 2005, it was the same thing that happened. I had the opportunity. It was the attempts. You know, I had two veteran quarterbacks. 2003 with the Jets, Benny Testaverde had to get thrown into that because Chad Pennington got hurt. Benny saw every time I came in when I was, you know, because I was coming in a lot, but I wasn't starting. He knew on film, Tanner, you keep showing up. That was my thing. Like, I learned that at an early age, at a young age, that, man, just show up. They're going to see you. So I would show up every time. Even when I'm backside out the read, I'm like, man, I'm finna show up. I'm gonna beat this dude. I don't care if I'm backside. So I would do that. And Benny starts saying, look, I would come out of the huddle and Benny say, hey, Trey, I might come back to you, man. I see you. You was open last week. Come on. And he did it against Miami. I beat Sam Madison on a bum. I remember. I scored that touchdown and the rest was history. Benny came to me every play. So you fast forward, that season now I had 1,100 some yards. I had 10 touchdowns. I broke a record for the most touchdowns in the consecutive game, you know, for the Jets. And I'm a Pro Bowl alternate again. You know what I mean? It's crazy how this stuff is. So now, 04, they like, man, this man finna get paid. Let's blackball. They don't want to throw me the ball. Right. But then now we finna get ready to go to playoffs. We got to throw 83 the ball. So all that stuff happened. You know, I can tell you that story another time. But to get to 2005, we had Patrick Ramsey as the quarterback. And the first game of the season, he goes down. Mark Monell goes in there within the sixth play of the game, seventh play of the game, I don't know. And he just have that same kind of, you know, vibe as Vinny Testaverde. He's watching everything. I would come back to the huddle, and he'd be like, 8-9, how was it? You was open? And you know, as a receiver, I'm going to say, yeah, anyway. So I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm open. And Mark, me and Mark didn't have a practice. We didn't have a practice rep all training camp. And got to think about it. This is my first time on, you know, with the team. So I went with Ramsey every play, every rep. And Mark get thrown out there, but just his knowledge of the game and just his respect for guys like myself, he put the ball in the air at me, and then I went out there, being the guy who I was from day one, just hungry. And that's why the, you know, the stats was up there, because every week now they drawing plays in the dirt for me, because they like, look, do it. We throwing it at you. So that's what the difference from my whole career. If you go back to 05, it was more opportunity. And we didn't really necessarily put a playbook up and say, we're going to run, you know how we have the little, no, we're going to do this and that and that. Man, they got to the point in the passing game in 05, it was just like, look, put this and throw the 89. We ran this, throw the 89. And that's how I was able to go out there and accumulate so many yards and have the season that I had.
Wow. They should have had that in the recipe every year after 2005. And speaking of your Washington career, MJ is famous for the flu game. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't know Santana Moss had a Hennessy game. 2007 against the Dallas Cowboys, Tanner Man is dealing with an injury. And if you don't know anything about the National Football League, when you're dealing with an injury, they usually emphasize a toward all shot. We call it a tee shot. They kind of numb the pain. You take it right before the ball game. It numbs your body for whatever ailment you're dealing with. You don't feel it until after the game, right? But you decline to take the tee shot, and you decided to take a few shots of Hennessy. Fill us in on that story. Against the Cowboys. And by the way, before he gets into the story, viewers, 9 catches. Tanner had straight off Hennessy. 9 catches, 121 yards, and a touchdown. Straight off Hennessy. Tell us about that story.
Hennessy shot.
Hey, Pat P, that was the Hennessy game. We're going to go ahead and give that the Hennessy game for Tanner.
Well, it's crazy because we – honestly, it's funny because I was doing it way before then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it meant more because of that game. I wasn't expecting to play. And I told
What my, injury you were dealing with?
I had a heel injury. So let me tell you how it happened. I go to New York, first time back in New York playing the Jets. Now, I go to back in New York every year because we play the Giants in New York. You know, that's my division. It's my first time playing my old team back in New York. And good friend of mine, you know Bo a DB, Bo a cornerback. So me and Bo talk football all day. That's like my boy, you know. He know who I'm playing before I know him. Bo know Tanner don't watch the guys. I don't care about who I'm facing. I don't like to see what good they do or bad because I want to see that day. You know what I mean? Because I know it's going to be a difference. Think about it, Pat P. And yourself, B-Man. Mm-hmm. You know certain guys, when you get facing them, you're going to change this a little bit about your game off the respect alone.
Yeah,
right. I know that as a receiver. It's certain DBs off of what I do to the other deep or the, you know, someone else. I'm going to change according to who I know him as. So I never cared about watching guys because I know it's going to be a different, you know, thing or scheme when it comes to us, you know, meeting each other face to face. So Bo warns me. He said, hey, man, the Jets have shown me by far the best corner that came out the draft. He's talking about Revis. He said, man, this dude here is lights out. I ain't know nothing diddly about Revis. So I'm like, well, yeah, you know, all right, I hear you. So we go out and play. Had a pretty productive game. Like, we didn't really, I could have won the game. I beat somebody. I'm not even sure if it was Revis or Revis. I beat somebody on a out and up, and Jason threw that thing in the stands. That's how. That was the story of my life, mad times with Jason. I love him to death. That's my boy. But his arm was too big for him. He didn't know what to do with that thing. That could have won the game. But we ended up winning anyway. But throughout the course of the game, I caught like a slant or something on Revis. And he fell on the back of my leg. And I was trying to break the tackle. You know how I am. I'm trying to break the tackle. And he fell directly on the back of my heel. And that thing was had a heartbeat. And I tried to just, you know, I took something and it got
out of pause.
But after the game, that thing slowed up on me, man. You know, it slowed up on me. And so from there, I had to miss a week. I missed 1 or 2 weeks. And leading up to Dallas week, I was finna miss.
Yeah.
And Dan came down, like, he came in the training room, and I'm like, this is odd. Dan's not in the training room. And you got to think, it's still new to me. It's only my third season with these guys. So I'm like, I ain't never see Snyder down here in the training room. Right. Like, man, right? So I'm like, you know, we in the third day of practice, and I ain't out there yet. I doubt it, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And so what we got to do? I said, what you mean what we got to do? I said, man, I can't even put a shoe on. Like, I'm walking around with that boot. Like, I can't even put my heel can't even take nothing. It's too sensitive. And so, like, I tell the story because Dan had nothing to do with anything that I did.
Yeah.
He just wanted me to out there. So I was like, look, I said, man, I know what I can do. Because I realize just by seeing him down there and knowing who he facing, I'm like, oh, man, it's Dallas. This is why he coming down here. I said, man, well, and I was against not practicing and playing.
Yeah.
A lot of other players cool with that. Not mm-hmm. me. Preparation was everything for me.
Right. No question.
Look,
no question.
You can be my quarterback for 16 weeks. If I miss 1 week of practice with you, I need to know how the velocity of that ball is coming. I need to know what you're seeing in certain plays. You know, that's why we rep this stuff. So yep. I was always big on being out there. And by me knowing that I wasn't out there, I was like, okay, I'm counting myself out. So, but seeing him now, I just got a different breath of motivation. Like, oh man, you know, the owner coming down here checking for you. Can't let them down. That's how I'm built. That's how I'm wired. So I say, if I try Viking in tomorrow in practice, and if it takes some of the pain away, I know what else to do on Sunday.
Yeah.
That Viking has got to give me the proof that, hey,
work.
So if this don't work, then I can rest assured that Viking ain't going to work. Never took mm-hmm. a bike. I took a Viking only once, and that was in New York. And I share that story another day. But that's how I realized the Viking could work.
Yeah.
So I took the Viking on Thursday practice. And you know, Thursday practice is where we're putting the most, you know, stuff in, especially red zone and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, third down. And so I took it and I put the shoe on halfway. I taped it up real good. Made it through practice, but I looked stank. I was,
yeah.
I had a lot of doubt. I had a lot of doubt in my mind, but I said to myself, I didn't try to hint. I know that's what I do anyway.
Yeah.
So leading to the game, I drank. That's just something that I did it in college in track. And that was, that's how I got to this, you know.
So you were taking a shot back in your college days.
I didn't do track. It in football in college. I did it in track in college.
Yeah. So yeah. So taking a shot was normal for you. Taking a shot was normal.
I discovered it late in college, though. It was late when I discovered it, mm-hmm. and so that's why I wasn't able to do it in football because you know it was after my last season of track. Mm-hmm. I was going to the pros.
Yep.
I knew it worked in college and track, so I was like, man, I've done this before. And I've done it before in the league. So let me just try this, you know. So we get into that game. I know I'm going to take the Viking in. So I told myself, before I take the Viking in, let me do my ritual.
Yeah.
You know, I lay my stuff out. I have my little Gatorade bottle that I done put my hand in already. It's always taped up. So, you know, down the road, most of the coaches that coach me, they'll look in my locker and know what's going on because they done heard the story enough.
Yeah, the Gatorade bottle with tape around it was Hennessy.
Bingo. At the time, no one knew why that Gatorade bottle had tape on it. They always thought he just had something he'd do with his Gatorade bottle. So at the time, no one knew. But when guys saw me in the locker room, put my stuff on, have my music pumping, they just came in knowing that, oh, we got 8-9 to play. He going to play, and we know this is Dallas.
Yeah.
And so I'm ready. I go out there. I go through warm-ups. I don't have a bike in it at all, and I'm gliding through warm-up. Like, put my foot in the ground. So they done messed up. So now I go in the locker room, I'm like, give me the Viking. Because I know what the Viking is going to do. Yeah. But I didn't know what this hand was going to do. The hand numbed everything. But so I put the Viking in, and the hand, That's the, you know, trust me.
How much hen did you drink? How much hen did you drink?
No, it's always a reasonable amount. Now, don't get me wrong. Really? So I pour a little bit in there and then I dilute it with Gatorade. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my thing about it. Like, I would get the Gatorade, I pour the Gatorade in the cup, I fill the hen up, you know, to the bottom, and then I dilute that stuff with Gatorade. So, you know, it's getting to me quick because you know what the Gatorade do? It gets in that bloodstream real quick.
Yeah.
So it's hitting me faster than it would be if I wasn't chasing it at all. You know, I didn't know the Vicodin and the hen was going to work that way. And I won't advise nobody or anybody who listens to this. Don't do that. Don't do that. And take, you know, take medication. Cause to be honest with you, I heard things in that stadium I shouldn't have heard. Like I could hear a pin drop in the nose. Like I was literally sitting on the sideline at times and it was like, I heard conversations. Man, it was just like, damn.
Hey, Tanner, it was like you were playing during a pandemic with an empty stadium. You were hearing everything in there.
Everything.
I was questioning myself, man, so much. Like, man, what's that small for doing this, man? But I wanted to play so bad, honestly, man. I wanted to play so bad. I mean, you know, amongst all the stuff that we was going through at that time, I was just trying to play, be there for my team. I mean, we could sit here and laugh and joke about it. I did it. And I didn't do it with just to be saying I'm doing this because it's just something I want to do. Like I did
team God.
It gave me my comfort that I needed. It eased the little stuff that I was going through that I had to get over so I can go out and do what I do. And I went out there and put on the show. I went out there and played well. I don't think we was inches away from winning again. You know, we didn't win. Freaking first down and all that.
Hey, Pat P, that's his first down. Anytime we be on the Blu-ray table and Tanner boo somebody, I say, he do the other first down signal. Hey, he used to kill Dallas with that. Anytime Montana play against Dallas in a Washington uniform, he would get that first down.
I believe that game, T.O. did it. T.O. Did it at our sideline, and I ran a reverse and did it back at their sideline. Like, would you ever do my damn?
Hey, Tanner, I got one more for you before we get to our superlatives. In that same season, I know you lost someone very dear to you as the Washington family and the University of Miami family dealing with the tragedy of Sean Taylor. What did he mean to those programs?
He meant a lot, man. I mean, Sean, it's hard to talk about him and just because, and it's great to just keep his legacy going. Like, I love the fact that we talk about him so much because I feel like he's like one of those players you'd be like, what if? You know what I mean? Like, we understand a lot of change in our game. But if you really saw who he was becoming, what if? Mm-hmm. Like, what could he have been? You know what I mean? And I really think the demise of our team was because of Sean gone. He roamed that secondary. He put fear in everybody game plan, man. You know, if Sean Taylor's back there, people come into the game a little differently. They're gonna scout a little differently. Yeah, I mean, it was just a lot we lost, man. But To be truthful, you know, I didn't share that time with him in Miami, but I can tell you that everybody who was there in Miami, who knew of his play there, they felt just like we felt in Washington. You know, I was devastated. I think in a lot of the ways that I live today is because of having to experience that. Like, I really, man, if I can't sit here and just say, put a pinpoint at something that I was doing at the time, but I was frightened to do anything that I wasn't doing right. After Sean, you know, left us. And one, because I was able to sit there and share a lot of, you know, intimate moments with him outside of us being on the field. We shared and conversated or conversed, I shall say, with each other a lot. Just sitting there in the training room. We was both dealing with injuries that year. And I recall that same week that those guys broke into the house the first time. We talked about it. I sat there and the advice I gave was like, Sean, let that be. But we know Sean. He was like, nah, man, he felt violated. He felt like if I was there, something else would have been happening, you know, would have happened. And I'm like,
I didn't know that was the second time. I didn't know it was the first time.
They came
back. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They came back. They came
that's
back.
The same people?
Came back when he wasn't supposed to go home or something like that,
They came back. And the only reason why they came back is because they knew he was in the season and they came for a safe.
Wow.
I don't know the whole story.
Yeah.
I'm getting what I know. But all I know is that they was there for a party that his sister or someone of Sean, you know, Sean family threw a party and she showed him around and she showed him something that they weren't supposed to see. So they came back for that safe.
Wow.
Sean First time they came, no, the party was over. They came by themselves. They didn't get it. The second time, Sean ended up being there. And wow. How, you know, the situation happened. But just to get back to your question, he meant a lot, man. And I think, you know, I tried my best for the remainder of the time I play as a pro to allow Sean to play through me. I know this might sound crazy and, you know, people looking at, man, tell what you're talking about. Look, that was something that I put on the table. I like, look, you know, when I prayed every, you know, game going into that end zone, I got on that knee. I wanted Sean to play with me because he, you know, just knowing that his presence was always felt. Like, I felt like walking in the locker room, you got to think, me, Sean, and Portis. Our lockers was next to each other. Me, Sean, and Portis. Like, we was boys. We would talk. That weekend that he left us, me, Sean, and Portis was the last person in the locker room. Sean wasn't coming. We knew he was going to Miami. We was going to Tampa. Yeah. He told us to go out there and have a good game. I see y'all when y'all get back. You know, so it was devastating, man. But, you know, you can always find a silver lining in things, whether it's good or bad. And I felt like it woke a lot of us up, honestly. Yeah. I really truly believe that my game changed a lot. The things that I took for granted changed a lot. And I had more of a purpose, just knowing that life is short. And I always knew it was short, but it really showed me that. Just this guy had a promising career ahead of himself. And beyond football, I saw changes in this man as a man. Sean wasn't going out with us. We had a weekend in D.C. called the Three Kings.
Yeah.
Portis. So let me tell you how we came about it. Portis, myself, and Sean, we all from Miami. And I didn't even know the reason why we made this thing. But Portis realized that his birthday is the 1st of August. Sean's birthday is the 1st of April. And my birthday is the 1st of June. So we all like, and Portis made his thing, Three Kings. We all going to have a weekend where and everybody and their mama would come worldwide. And they would come and party and celebrate with us. Sean would never show up. And if he did show up, he showed up on the last night. Mm-hmm. And he barely would hang. He'd show his face, but he was changing as a man. He stopped hanging. He stopped doing all the crazy stuff that we heard early in his career because he had a new purpose. He had a daughter, you know, baby Jackie, and he wanted to be a better father. And the things that people talked about Sean in the paper, you know, it was very hurtful to hear some of those people talk about him the same way when he passed. Because if I recall, it was one reporter said, well, the person that we know, you know, for what happened to him, it was almost something that we will assume that would happen.
Wow.
Know this man. How could you put that on somebody, you know? And it took me by surprise. But then again, I wasn't surprised because I understand a lot of people that cover us don't really know us. You know, they cover anything. They see how they see the violence that he played with, the recklessness. They see, you know, a couple of instances that he had where he spit in somebody's face and, you know, the case that he caught for someone stealing his ATVs. All that stuff basically proves who you are, I guess. You know what I mean? In a world that we give people a thousand of chances, you know what I mean? So we're going to just judge you because of what we saw or what we heard.
Yeah.
And I think he left here and gave a lot of people that right to give him a bad rep. But guys like myself, guys like Portis, guys who really knew him and played with him and the coaches that coached him, I'm glad that we are able to keep his legacy on and have these talks that we're having today about it.
Well said. Well said, man. Sean Taylor was I was a fan and an enemy at the same time because anytime we played Miami, you know, Florida State, Miami, we used to always go into the week, man. Don't help this man get drafted higher than where he should go.
Oh, man.
That's all he's always said.
Oh, man. That,
and this man used to always pick six, knock someone out, block a punt.
Oh, yeah.
And like, oh, man. And so, but heck of a football player. Like you said, the what if that tragedy never happened, where is he when you talk about the elites of the elites, not just at his position, but in totality of all positional players in National Football League?
Well, we're going to see if we're going to have him on the, I ain't going to give him no.
Hold on, Pat. You can't give him a hint. You can't give him a hint. we're going to transition to the superlative part of our show. And Pat P already had a question ready for you. So we out the gate. It's the first third down. We're going to press you. We're going to get in your chest. Pat P said he's going to get in your chest with this question. Hey, so Pat, you run with the first one.
Miami Hurricanes, Mount Rushmore. Four people.
Yeah, Miami Hurricanes and Mount Rushmore. You heard the question, Tanner. Mm-mm.
Oh,
rapid fire.
Oh,
Yeah, you got to give us four.
And there was a lot of greats in there, a lot of Hall of Famers.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But you got four.
You got four.
Michael Irvin.
Okay.
Quarterback position, I would say Geno Toretta.
Okay. Old school.
That ain't tough. Pat P, man, he having problems getting off that jam right now. He having problems getting off that jam.
I'm fighting Pat P right now with this one. It's tough. And then guess what? It's not going to be everybody else's around, you know, Mount Rushmore. I'm going to put Edgerrin James in that.
Okay.
He's more
EJ.
Than EJ.
And it's your Mount Rushmore, so who cares what anybody else thinks?
I'm going to just say Ed Reed, man. Ed Reed.
Geno, Irvin, Edgerrin James, Ed Reed.
Ed Reed.
That's Santana Mount Rushmore for Hurricanes.
Ain't bad.
His list.
Yeah,
his list. Last question for you, and that's the superlative part of this show. Most underappreciated wide receiver in National Football League.
You're looking at him.
There it is.
Looking at him. And look, and let's be real. You know me, and be Mac, you know me for a while. I don't want nothing than what did I deserve. You know, I don't want more than I deserve. Put it like that. All I want is what I deserve. But the reason why I say that is because people see, like I said, they're enamored by stats. And the stats doesn't always tell the story. Mm. It tells part of it because you have to go out there and do it.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, too. And the reason why I'm going to bring this argument up, and I'm, like I said before, I care less. When I was a Hurricane, me and Reggie was fighting for 700 yards a year. That's all we was getting. I had 1 year when I had 899. And guess why? Reggie hurt his knee the last couple of games of the season, so it was on my show. But more, every year we knew he was going to get by 700 yards. Yeah. And guess what he was considered? Two of the better wide receivers in collegiate football. So why did those 700-yard receivers didn't get no flack for catching 1,000 yards then? But then we get into the league, and just because you didn't have 1,000 yards, you're not considered top of your class or your core. I get it. Trust me, I fought hard every year for those 1,000 yards. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
But if the system doesn't allow you to flourish that way, all you can be is all you can be. And I felt like with little that I got, I always, you know, did more. And so that's all I want credit for. Man, look, I'm not nobody because I know how hard it is to play this game that we love.
Mm-hmm.
And how hard it is to be elite at our individual positions. A lot of guys, man, I look at and I be like, whew. But then there's a lot of guys look at him like, bro, if I had a piece of what you had, you know what I'm saying? So, nah, you know, that's just being real. So as a receiver, all we can do is what they allow us to do. Like, I need the guys up front to block for my quarterback. I need my quarterback to be in sync with me. When you got 15 of them in 14 years, how could you ever – you know, find that comfort or find that chemistry and have those kind of, you know, seasons, you know, to put together. So I feel like I work hard, man. I look forward for 800-yard seasons.
Mm-hmm.
No bull. That was my line. Look, man, when all said and done, I got to get 800.
Yeah.
Because I knew that it wasn't going to be peaches and cream for me. And you got to think, I'm already small in stature. So I'm like, I got so many odds against me right now.
Yeah.
I just got to get enough to be able to say I could be considered amongst the pack. And that's what I did. I fought hard for that because I knew that my team wasn't going to always. And then you got to also put into context that some of these offenses now are wide open. I played in a run-oriented offense all my career.
Yeah, college and pros.
Curtis Martin leading the league almost every year.
Yeah.
Then as a, you know, a skin, now we call them, you know, Washington football team. You had Portis.
Mm-hmm.
You had Alfred Morris. Yeah. You had so many other guys that was back there that we fed that ball to. So the one time that I got amongst the offense that we really spread the football out was when the Shanahans got there. And by that time, I had one season with them when I had 1,000 yards where I was a starter. And the next year I was in the slot. And we was all sharing the ball and getting 600 yards apiece.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I look at it and I say, you know, I'm not sitting here saying give Tanner this praise. Nah, I don't deserve nothing that not deserving. But for what I've done, nah, speak my name amongst the others, because I feel like in that 2000 era from 2001, let's say up to 2010, regardless of what went on, when you came to Washington, who you had to check for?
Moss. Hey, I know that. Hey, you used to run that out route, man, like you was stepping on cockroaches, man. You run the out route so hard and precise, but you like, boy, you better get up out that pedal. Hey, don't be sitting too deep in that pedal.
And may I say this? Although the people that are stat watchers and they just don't watch the game, they don't know football.
Yeah.
Guys that always giving me my flowers, the guys who I faced was the DBs. Those guys I really had to sit up there in front of. When I see them, they always, boy, look at here. You know, I remember sitting there, you know, we play Boo a lot, and I still do now when I pop up in town. I go to Trail House and Trail Road.
Mm-hmm.
And Trail say, Tanner, man, it got to a point where you was a slot guy. We knew you coming in on third down. And our coaches used to tell us, look, when A9 come in the game, just know he could beat you.
He getting the ball.
Just know he getting the ball. And Trail said, I'd be darned, man. You whoever on you, that you beating them. And we said,
especially third and six.
Yeah, sat here and went over this. And I told Trail, I said, man, Trail, I never knew that, you know, and you know, as players leading up to the game, you're gonna always have your scout report, who the guys were. And you know, it was great to hear a story from a guy who I faced twice a year and also the Hurricane. And he's a guy that always, me and him both wore six at the U. He said, Ten, I ain't gonna lie, man. We knew third down, you came in the game, we got a check for you, and you found a way to still get open. So that right there is just more than enough that I can receive. But when I hear people talk about others, I sit back and I don't say much because I'm not tripping on it. I just feel like, man, don't watch the stats. Go watch the games. Go see what I was doing with the little that I was getting, you know?
No doubt. Well said, man. Well, Santana, man, thank you for joining us here on All Things Covered, man. A great conversation with Santana Moss, the cowboy killer, to say the least. It might not be too late to get a little Hennessy trademark, too, Tanner. It might not be too late for that. You know what I mean? Go ahead and get that Hennessy trademark. Yeah, get something. Get a little sponsorship going on, baby. Right. Getting that Gatorade got you 121.
Look, for you to tell me that, it's three things that people have told me to trademark throughout my career playing football.
Yeah.
Big time player, step up in big games.
Yep.
If that was against your boys, you know, you, Florida State, you weren't there yet, I don't think. And the cowboy killer, I've heard trademark cowboy killer. Man, look, that was given to me. I don't care less about it. But now you're telling me the Hennessy trademark. Man, I can't take
it. It's worth a shot.
Look.
Hey. Go ahead, get that thing trademarked and bring some of your gifts to the Blu-ray table so I can boo you. I ain't going to let you in either, Tay. You know I let you in every 90. I'm going to boo you, get that trademark.
We got the same kind of method of how we do things. We don't allow guys to get in. But when it's time to kill you, we got that, man, look here. I can't help you, your kid, your mama, nobody. I got to give it to you. So.
Gotta get
them. Hey, no doubt. But, man, appreciate you joining us here on All Things Covered, man. Santana Moss, man.
Much love.
Former New York Jets. Former Washington football team player, of course, former Hurricane as well.
Pat, keep doing your thing, man. We watching you, boy. Keep it up.
Appreciate it, Santana.
All love, man.
Thanks again to Santana Moss. Thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of All Things Covered. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe and leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back with you soon where you can expect all things will be covered.
Peace.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flake.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.